Captain Meifert stood awkwardly. Kalin signaled with a hand, dismissing him. He bowed and quietly backed out of the tent. "I'm going for a walk," Richard whispered. "I need to be alone." He waved toward the blankets. "Just go on to bed without me." Richard walked alone into the darkness. Chapter 66. He quietly dismissed for the evening the woman dusting all the elaborate woodwork, and after closing the door behind her, went to the bedroom. Teresa turned when she heard him come in. "Dalton," she smiled. "There you are, sweetheart." "Tess." He had run the entire state of affairs through his mind a thousand times, and had finally come to the place where he could face Tess and know he would be able to control his response. He had to control himself. He had retreated into his most trusted method of handling things. Only there could he be sure of his control. He was going to handle this just as he handled so many other things. "I didn't expect to see you in so early." "Tess, I heard something." She sat at the mirror, brushing her beautiful hair.
"Really? Some interesting news?"
"A bit. I heard you have been occupying the bed of the Sovereign. Is this true?" He knew now it was. He had pulled every thread of his cobweb. She stopped brushing and looked at him in the mirror, her face a mix of emotions. Defiance predominated them.
"Dalton, it's not like he's another man. It's the Sovereign."
She stood and turned to him, unsure how he was going to react.
"He is next to the Creator."
"May I ask how this came about?"
"Bertrand said the Creator spoke to him."
She stared off to a distant place.
"The Creator told Bertrand that because I had been faithful to you and had never been with another man, and because you had been faithful to me, the Creator had chosen me to be the one to release Bertrand's worldly tensions."
Her eyes focused on him again.
"So, you see, it's a reward for you too, Dalton, for your faithfulness to me."
Dalton made himself answer. "Yes, I can see that.
Bertrand says it's my holy duty."
"Holy duty?"
"When I'm with him, it's like, I don't know, it's so special. To help a Sovereign in this world is an honor as well as a duty. To think I help relieve him of the awful tension that builds up in him from being Sovereign. It's an awesome responsibility, Dalton, being Sovereign."
Dalton nodded. "You're right." Seeing that he wasn't going to get angry and harm her, she stepped closer.
"Dalton, I still love you just the same."
"I'm glad to hear it, Tess. That was what I'm most worried about. I fear I've lost your love." She grasped his shoulders.
"No, silly. Never. I still love you the same. But the Sovereign has called upon me. You have to understand that. He needs me."
Dalton swallowed. "Of course, darling. But we can still be together in bed."
"Oh, Dalton, of course we can. Is that what you were worried about? That I'd not have time for you too? Dalton, I love you and will always want you."
"Good," he nodded. "That's good.
Come to bed, sweetheart, and I'll show you. You might even find me more exciting now. And Dalton, it's a high honor to be with the Sovereign. Everyone will only think more of you."
"I'm sure you're right."
"Come to bed, then."
She kissed his cheek.
"Let me show you how happy I can make you."
Dalton scratched his forehead. "Ah, I would love nothing better. Really, I would. But I have a whole pile of urgent work. The vote just came in."
"I know, Bertrand told me."
"Bertrand." She nodded.
"The Sovereign, silly. He told me. I'm so proud of you, Dalton. I know you had a part in it.
It wasn't all just Bertrand's work. I know you had a hand in helping him win." "A part. It's kind of the Sovereign to take note of my contribution."
"He speaks very highly of you, Dalton."
"I'm pleased to hear that." Dalton cleared his throat. Look, Tess, I've got to get to my work. I have urgent matters."
"Should I wait up?"
Dalton waved a hand. No, darling. I have to make a trip into Fairfield to see to some matters."
"Tonight? Yet tonight?"
"Yes."
"Dalton, you mustn't work so hard. Promise me you will take some time for yourself. Promise me. I worry for you."
"You shouldn't. I'm fine." She smiled her most intimate smile.
"Promise me you will make time to make love to me?"
Dalton smiled.
"Of course. I promise. He kissed her cheek. Good night, darling.
The woman holding out the vial frowned.
Do I know you?
No, Kaylin said, turning her face down so it would be shadowed by the lamplight. I don't see how. I'm from far away. I only came into Fairfield for this.
Kaylin wore common clothes she used for traveling and a head wrap made of a scarf so her long hair would be hidden. She put on the head wrap after she was away from their camp. With Richard off somewhere, the soldiers insisted on escorting her on her walk to get some air. She had gruffly ordered them to leave her alone and go back to their posts. Such orders would never have worked with Kara. Kara would have ignored them. The soldiers were not as fearless or as reckless or as smart as Kara. The woman sighed.
Well, I understand, my dear. A number of women have made a journey for such as this.
She held out the stoppered vial, clearly expecting payment first. Kaylin passed her a gold sovereign.
Keep it all. I expect your silence in return.
The woman bowed her head.
I quite understand. Thank you, my dear. Very generous of you. Thank you.
Kaylin took the vial, holding it nestled in her palm, staring through its clouded glass at the clear liquid inside. She realized her other hand was on her belly. She let the arm drop to her side.
Now,
the woman said, pointing at the poorly made glass vial.
It will remain good for the night, since I just mixed it for you. You can take it whenever you please, but if you wait until morning, it will likely not still be potent enough. I'd suggest you do it tonight before you go to bed.
Will it hurt?
The woman's face frowned with concern.
Likely not more than a regular cycle, my dear, not with it being this early. There will just be the bleeding, so be prepared for that.
Kaylin had meant would it hurt the baby. She couldn't bring herself to repeat the question.
Just drink it all down, the woman went on. It isn't so bad to taste, but you might want some tea with it.
Thank you.
Kaylin turned to the door.
Oh, wait, said the woman.
She came up close and took Kaylin's hand.
I'm sorry, my dear. You're plenty young. You can have another.
A thought struck her.
This won't impair my ability.
No, no, dear, not at all. You'll be fine.
Thank you,
Kaylin said, as she stepped toward the door, suddenly eager to be out of the little home, out into the darkness and alone, in case she had to cry. The woman snatched Kaylin's arm and turned her around.
I don't usually lecture young women, because by the time they come to me, the time for lecturing is long past. But I hope you get yourself married, dear. I help when I'm needed, but I'd rather help you deliver your baby than shed it. I really would.
Kaylin nodded. I feel the same.
Thank you.
The streets of Fairfield were dark, but there were still people going about their business. Kaylin knew that when the Imperial Order came, the business of their lives would be soon turned inside out. At that moment, though, she had trouble caring. She decided she would do it before she got back. She feared Richard finding the vial and having to explain it to him. Richard would never let her do this, but since he didn't know about her condition, she had been able to get his true feelings and wishes. He was right. They had the rest of the people to worry about. They couldn't let their personal problem bring harm to everyone. Shoda would keep her word about such a thing, and then they wouldn't be able to see to their duty. This would be best. On the way out of the city, she saw Dalton Campbell coming up the street on horseback, so she turned down a dark street. He always seemed to be a man of careful thought. As he rode by, Kaylin thought he looked as if he was in another world. She wondered what he was doing in a part of the city that had a reputation for ill repute. She waited until he passed before she went on her way. As she reached the road back to the minister's estate, where their men were camped, she saw the glint of moonlight off the top rail of a carriage in the far distance. It would be some time before the plodding carriage reached her, but she turned off the road just the same. She didn't want to meet anyone along the road, especially someone who might recognize her. The lump in her throat was near to choking her as she walked into the field of wheat. Silent tears streamed down her cheeks. Off the road a ways, she finally sank to her knees, giving in to the tears. As she stared at the vial resting in her palm, moonlight reflecting off the wavy glass, she couldn't recall ever feeling much lower in her life. She sobbed back a cry, stifling her weeping, reminding herself this was for the good of everyone. It was. She was sure of it. She pulled the stopper.
letting it fall from her fingers. She held the vial up, trying to see it in the watery moonlight. She pressed her other hand over their child, her child, Richard's child. Swallowing back the tears, she put the vial to her lips. She paused, waiting until she could get control of her breathing. She didn't want to empty it into her mouth and then not be able to swallow. Kaelin pulled it away from her lips. She stared at it in the moonlight again and thought of everything this meant. And then she turned it over, emptying the liquid out on the ground. Immediately she felt a wave of relief, as if her life had been spared and hope had returned to the world. When she stood, the tears were a distant memory, already drying on her cheeks. Kaelin smiled with relief, with joy. Their child was safe. She threw the empty vial out into the field. When she did so, Kaelin saw a man standing out in the wheat, watching her. She froze. He started toward her, purposefully, quickly. Kaelin looked to the side and saw other men coming. Behind, yet more were closing on her. Young men, she saw, all with red hair. Not waiting an instant for the situation to get any worse, she reacted instinctively and broke into a dead run toward their camp. Rather than trying to go between the men, she headed directly toward one. He hunkered down, feet spread, arms out, waiting. Kaelin raced up to him and seized his arm. She looked into his eyes, recognizing him as a messenger named Rowley. Without effort of thought, and in that instant, she released her power into him, bracing for the jolt that would take him. The same instant, nothing happened. She realized it was because the chimes had caused her magic to fail. She thought she felt it within her, as always, but it was gone. In that same instant of realization, recognition, and failure, she suddenly did feel magic. Kaelin knew the tingling invasion of magic, overpowering in its onrushing surge, snaking into her like a viper down a hole, and just as deadly. She jerked her arm back, but too late, she knew. Men closed in from both sides, less concerned now that they had her. Men behind were still running toward them. Only an instant had passed since she first grabbed Rowley and let him go. In that time, she made the only decision she could. She had only one chance, fight or die. Kaelin kicked the man to her right in the sternum. She felt the bone snap under her boot heel. He went down with an indrawn gasp. She kneed Rowley in the groin. She gouged at the eyes of the man on her left. It brought her an opening. She raced for it, only to be brought up short when a man behind got her by the hair, jerking her violently back. She spun, kicking him in the side, using her elbows as men closed in. It was the last strike she landed. They caught her arms. A heavy blow slammed into her middle. She instantly knew it had done something terrible to her. Another to her face, and then another, took her senses. She couldn't get her wind. She didn't know up from down. She couldn't breathe. She tried to cover her face, but they had her arms. She gasped as more fists hammered her middle. More snapped her head this way and that. She tried to swallow the blood in her mouth before it choked her. She heard the men growl like a pack of dogs and grunt with the effort of hitting her as hard as they could. The fierce panic of helplessness seized her. The blows rained down. She hung helpless. The pain was stunning. They pounded her toward the ground. Blackness, like death itself, swallowed her. And then the pain ebbed away into nothingness, and the merciful peace of the light enveloped her. In a daze, Richard walked through the field of moonlit wheat. Everything was such a mess. He felt as if so much was piled on top of him he couldn't breathe. He didn't know what to do. The chimes, the imperial order, none of it was going right. Yet everyone depended on him, whether or not they knew it. The people of the Midlands counted on him to repel the imperial order. The Daharans depended on him for leadership. Everyone was in danger from the chimes, and they were growing stronger by the day. On top of that, to have worked and sacrificed so much for these people of Andereth, only to have them turn away from him was crushing. The worst of it, though, was that he and Kaelin had to put it all before a child. Richard was willing to risk, Shota, if Kaelin was. He knew the danger a child could pose, but he was willing to fight for the right to their own future. But how could they worry about a child now, with the chimes and the order both ruthlessly bearing down on the world? Adding Shota into the mix would be beyond reason. Kaelin saw that too, but he knew it was hard for her, putting duty first her whole life. But if they didn't do their part, their duty, the world would fall to Jigang's tyranny, into slavery, if the chimes didn't kill them all first. Before any of the rest of it, they had to stop the chimes. The chimes were nobody's fault but his. He was responsible for banishing them. Still, even if he could figure out what Joseph Ander had done, they had Jagang to deal with before they could think about having a child. Kalin understood that. He thanked the good spirits for that one thing good in his life, Kalin. He realized he must be close to Fairfield. He should turn back. Kalin would be worried. He had been gone a long time. He didn't want to worry her. She had enough worries. He hoped she wouldn't be too distraught about not having a child right now. As he turned, he thought he heard something. He straightened and listened. He didn't know how long the noise had gone on because he hadn't been paying much attention to anything but trying to think of solutions to their problems. Now he cocked his head to hear. It sounded oddly like muffled thuds. Without stopping to think it over, Richard started running toward the sound. As he got closer, he realized he heard men grunting in effort, panting, exerting themselves. Richard burst upon them, a gang of men, beating someone on the ground. He seized the hair of one and yanked him back. Under the man, he saw a bloody body. They were beating the poor soul to death. Richard recognized the man he had. It was one of the messengers. Rowley, he thought the man's name was. He had a wild, savage look in his eyes. Rowley, seeing that it was Richard, immediately went for his throat, crying, "Get him!" Richard whipped his other arm around Rowley's neck, seized his chin, bent him over, and yanked back, snapping his neck. Rowley went down in a limp heap. Another man sprang forward. His onrushing momentum was his worst mistake. Richard rammed the heel of his hand square into the man's face. He was still falling across Rowley as Richard snatched the red hair of another, pulled him forward, and drove his knee up into the man's jaw. His jaw broken, he staggered back. The men were all up now, and Richard realized he might soon be joining the body on the ground. His advantage was that they were already tired from their exertion. His disadvantage was that they greatly outnumbered him, and they were mad with bloodlust. Just as they were about to dive onto Richard, they saw something and scattered. Richard spun around and saw the Bakatamana blade masters sweeping in out of the night, their swords whistling through the night air. Richard realized they must have been shadowing him as he went for his walk to be alone. He hadn't even known they were there. As they went after the mob, Richard knelt down beside the body in the trampled wheat. Whoever it was, they were dead. Richard stood with a sorrowful sigh. He stared down at the broken form that had once been a person, probably only a short time before. It looked like it must have been a terrible end. If only he had been closer, sooner, he might have been able to stop it. Suddenly, not having the stomach to look at the bloody body or others nearby, Richard walked away. He hadn't gone more than a few paces when a thought brought him to a halt. He turned around and looked. He winced at the notion, but then thought, what if it had been someone he cared about? Wouldn't he want somebody who was there to do whatever they could? He was the only one around to help, if he even could. He guessed it was worth a try. The person was already dead. There was nothing to lose. He ran back and knelt beside the body. He couldn't even tell if it was a man or woman, except that there were pants, so he assumed it to be a man. He put a hand under the neck and wiped some of the mask blood from the swollen, cut lips, and then put his over them. He remembered what Denna had done to him when he was near death. He recalled Kara doing it to Dushalu. He blew a breath of life into the lifeless corpse. He lifted his mouth and listened to the breath wheeze from the body. He blew another breath, and then another, and then another. He knelt by the body for what seemed like ages, but he knew could be only minutes, blowing in the breath of life, hoping against hope the poor, unfortunate soul would still be with them. He prayed to the good spirits for help. He wanted so much for something good to come of his experience at the hands of Denna, the Mordsith. He knew Denna would want life to be her legacy. Kara had already brought Dushalu back, proving that Mordsith could do more than take life. He again prayed fervently to the good spirits to help him, to keep this soul here with this person rather than take it now. With a gasp, life returned. Someone was coming. Richard looked up and saw two of the blade masters trotting back. Richard didn't need to ask if they were successful. That gang of young men would murder no more people in the night. Someone else was coming, too. It was an older gentleman in dark clothes. He rushed up with frightened urgency. The man was staggered by the sight.
Oh, dear Creator, not another one.
Another one? Richard asked. The man fell to his knees, seeming not to hear Richard. He took up a bloody hand, pressing it to his cheek.
Take the Creator, he whispered.
He looked up at Richard.
I have a carriage.
He pointed. Just there on the road. Help me get this poor wretch to my carriage, and we can take him to my home.
Where? Richard asked.
Fairfield, the man said, watching the blade masters carefully, tenderly, lift the unconscious but breathing person.
Well, Richard said, wiping the blood from his mouth, I guess it's a lot closer than the camp with my soldiers.
Richard thought he might have to help the man, but the man refused the offer of a helping arm.
Are you Lord Rawl, then?
Richard nodded. The man stopped then, pulling Richard's hand up to shake it.
Lord Rawl, I'm honored to meet you, though not under such circumstances. My name is Edwin Winthrop.
Richard pumped the man's hand.
Master Winthrop? Edwin, please.
Edwin grasped Richard's shoulders.
Lord Rawl, this is just terrible. My beloved wife, Claudine.
Edwin fell into tears. Richard gently took hold of his arms to be sure the man wouldn't collapse.
My beloved wife, Claudine, was murdered in just this fashion, beaten to death out on this road.
I'm so sorry, Richard said, now understanding Edwin's reaction.
Let me help this poor wretch. No one was there to help my Claudine as you've helped this person. Please, Lord Rawl, let me help.
It's Richard, Edwin. I would like nothing better than for you to help. Richard watched as Gian and his blade masters helped to carefully load the person into the carriage.
I'd like three of you to go with Edwin. We can't tell if whoever is responsible for this will try again.
There will be no one to report their failure, Gian said.
They will realize it sooner or later. Richard turned to Edwin.
You must not tell anyone of this, or you will be in danger. They might come to finish the job.
Edwin was nodding as he climbed into the carriage.
I have a healer, a lifelong friend I can trust.
Richard and two of the blade masters walked the lonely road back to camp in silence. They had previously expressed their absolute faith that he would banish the chimes that had tried to kill their spirit woman. Richard didn't have the heart to tell them he was no closer to doing so than he was back then. When he got back, most of the camp was asleep. Richard wasn't in the mood to talk with the officers or sentries. He was thinking about Joseph Ander and the chimes. Kaelin wasn't in their tent. She had probably gone to be with Du Shalu, and Du Shalu had come to value Kaelin's presence, the comfort of another woman. It was close to time for the baby to be born. Richard took Joseph Ander's journey book and a lamp and went to another tent used by officers for planning. He wanted to work on translating more of the journey book, but didn't want to keep Kaelin from sleeping when she got back. Richard knew that if he worked in their tent, she would want to sit up with him. There was no need for that. Chapter 67. Richard was puzzling over an involved and confusing translation, trying to work through the maze of possible meanings, when Jian slipped into the tent. The soldiers would have asked permission to enter. The blade masters just assumed they had permission to go wherever they wanted. After the constant formality with the soldiers, Richard found it refreshing.
Gaharin, you must come with me. Du Shalu has sent me.
Richard shot to his feet.
The baby? The baby is coming? I'll get Kaelin. Let's go.
No. Gian put a restraining hand against Richard's shoulder.
Not your child. She sent me to get you, and she said to come alone.
She doesn't want me to get Kaelin?
No, Gaharin. Please, you must do as our spirit woman, your wife, asks.
Richard had never seen such a look of concern in Gian's dark eyes. Man was always stone with a sword. Richard held out a hand, inviting Gian to lead the way. To his surprise, it was near dawn. Richard had been working the entire night. He hoped Kaelin was asleep. If she wasn't, she would scold him for not getting any rest. Gian had two horses saddled and waiting. Richard was startled. The man would run rather than ride, unless Du Shalu told him to ride, and that was just about never.
What's going on?
Richard gestured off toward Du Shalu's tent. I thought Du Shalu wanted me. Gian swung into his saddle.
She is in the city.
What is she doing in Fairfield? I'm not sure it's safe there for her, not after they've been turning everyone against us.
Please, Gaharin, I beg you, come with me and hurry.
Richard sprang up onto his horse.
Of course, I'm sorry, Gian, let's go.
Richard was beginning to worry that Du Shalu had already come to trouble from people in Fairfield. They knew she was with Richard and Kaelin. For that matter, they knew she was Richard's wife. He urged his horse into a run. Anxiety twisted in his gut. The door to a house set back among trees opened. Edwin peered out. Richard, by now in a state of deep concern, relaxed a bit. The person they saved was probably not making it, and they wanted him to see them before death came, since he had breathed the breath of life back into them. Richard didn't understand what Duchelieu was doing there, but he surmised that she had a common bond with the person, having been brought back to life in the same way herself. Edwin, looking concerned and frightened, led them back through hallways and through well-kept rooms in the large house. It had an empty, quiet, sad feel to it. With Edwin's wife murdered, Richard thought it was to be expected. They reached a room at the end of a short, dimly lit hall. The door was closed. Gian knocked softly, and then escorted the despondent Edwin away. Edwin caught Richard's sleeve.
"Anything you need, Richard, I'm here."
Richard nodded, and Edwin let Gian take him away. The door eased open. Duchelieu peered out. When she saw it was Richard, she came out, putting a hand to his chest, backing him away. She pulled the door closed behind herself. She kept the restraining hand on his chest.
"Richard, you must listen to me. You must listen very carefully and not become crazy."
"Crazy? Crazy about what?"
"Richard, please, this is important. You must listen and do as I say. Promise me."
Richard could feel the blood draining out of his face. He nodded.
"I promise, Duchelieu."
"What is it?" She stepped closer. Keeping the hand on his chest, she added the other to his arm.
"Richard, the person you found, it was Kaelin."
"That's not possible. I'd know Kaelin." Duchelieu's eyes were brimming with tears.
"Richard, please, I don't know if she will live. You brought her back, but I don't know if... I wanted you to come."
He was having trouble getting his breath.
"But..." He couldn't think.
"But I would have known." "Duchelieu, you must be wrong. I would have known if it was Kaelin." Duchelieu squeezed his arm.
"I did not know myself until we cleaned some..."
Richard made for the door. Duchelieu pushed him back.
"You promised. You promised to listen."
Richard was hardly hearing her. He couldn't think. He could only see the bloody, broken body lying there in the field. He couldn't make himself believe it was Kaelin. Richard pushed his fingers back into his hair. He struggled to find his voice.
"Duchelieu, please, don't do this to me.
Please, don't you do this to me." She shook his arm.
"You must have strength, or she has no chance. Please, do not go crazy on me."
"What do you need? Name it, Duchelieu." Tears were running down his face.
"Please, tell me what you need."
"I need you to listen to me. Are you listening?" Richard nodded. He wasn't sure what she was asking, but he nodded as his mind was racing. He could cure her. He had magic. Healing was additive. The chimes took all the additive magic. She shook him again.
"Richard!"
"I'm sorry."
"What?"
"I'm listening." Duchelieu finally could no longer hold his gaze.
"She lost the child."
Richard blinked.
"Then you were wrong. It can't be Kaelin."
Duchelieu stared at the floor and took a deep breath.
"Kaelin was pregnant. She told me when we were at the place where you read the things of the Anderman."
"Westbrook?" Duchelieu nodded.
"There, before you went with her riding alone up to the mountain lake, she told me. She made me promise not to tell you. She said only it was a long story. I think now you have the right to my broken promise. She has lost the child."
Richard sank to the floor. Duchelieu hugged him as he wept uncontrollably.
"Richard, I understand your pain, but this will not help her."
Richard somehow forced himself to stop. He leaned back against the wall, numb and dazed, waiting for Duchelieu to tell him what he could do.
"You must stop the chimes."
He rushed to his feet.
"What?" "You could heal her if you had your magic."
It all fell into place. He had to stop the chimes, that was all. Just stop the chimes and then heal Kaelin.
"Richard, when we were at that place where Kaelin told me she was with child..."
The words "with child" jolted him anew, as he realized that Kaelin was going to have a child and he never knew, and now it had already died.
"Westbrook, Richard, listen to me. When we were there, the people said there was terrible wind and rain and fire that destroyed almost everything of that man."
"Yes, I believe it was the chimes."
"They hated him. You must have that same hate in your heart
for the chimes, so that you may vanquish them. Then you can have your magic back and heal Kalin.
Richard's mind was racing. The chimes hated Joseph Ander. Why? Not because the man had sent them back. He didn't do that. He had instead enslaved the chimes to serve him. The Dominie Dirch were somehow connected to what he did. When Richard and Kalin freed the chimes, they took their vengeance on certain of his possessions. But why the things at Westbrook and not those in the library at the minister's estate? Joseph Ander's words rang in his head. In the end, I have concluded I must reject the creator and the keeper both. I instead create my own solution, my own rebirth and death, and in so doing will always protect my people. And so farewell, for I shall lay my soul on troubled waters, and thus watch over for all time that which I have so carefully wrought, and which is now safeguarded and inviolate. Troubled waters. Richard finally understood what Joseph Ander had done. I have to go. Du Shailu, I have to go. Richard seized her by the shoulders. Please, keep her alive until I get back. You must. Richard, we will do our best. You have my word as your wife.
Edwin!
The man came shuffling down the hall.
Yes, Richard, what can I do? Name it. Can you hide these people here?
My wife. Richard had to swallow to keep control.
Can you keep Kalin here?
And Du Shailu and her five men. Edwin swept his arm in a wide arc, indicating his home.
It's a big house, a lot of room. No one will know who is here. I'd keep few friends, and the ones I have I would trust with my life.
Richard shook the man's hand. Thank you, Edwin. In return, I would ask you to leave your home when I return.
What? Why?
The Imperial Order is coming.
But aren't you going to stop them?
Richard threw up his hands.
How?
More to the point, why? These people have rejected the chance I've given them. Edwin, they murdered your wife just as they tried to murder mine. And you would have me risk the lives of good people to preserve their well-being? Edwin sagged.
No, I suppose not. There are some of us who were on your side, Richard. Some of us tried.
I know. That is why I'm giving you warning. Tell your friends to get out while they can. I'm sending my men out today. The Imperial Order will be here within 2 weeks.
How long will you be gone?
Maybe 10 days at the most. I have to get up to the wasteland above the Narif Valley.
Nasty place,
Richard nodded. You've no idea.
We will care for the Mother Confessor as well as anyone can.
Do you have barrels, Edwin? The man frowned.
Yes, down in the cellar.
Fill them with water. Collect food now. In a few days, the water and anything growing may not be safe.
Why would that be?
Richard ground his teeth. The gang is coming here for food. I'm going to give him a bellyache, at least.
Richard, Du Shailu said in a soft voice, meeting his gaze. I'm not sure. Do you want to see her before you go?
Richard steeled himself. Yes, please. Richard galloped his horse the whole way back to the encampment. He could get a fresh horse there, so he didn't spare the poor animal. It looked to him as he rode in that Captain Myford had the troops at a high state of alert. Sentries were doubled and posted farther out than usual. They had no doubt heard from the Bakatal Mana that there had been trouble. Richard hoped the man wouldn't ask about Kalin. He didn't think he could hold himself together if he had to tell him about her, if he had to describe the sight of her in that bed. Even knowing it was her, Richard had hardly recognized her. It was a sight beyond horror. It broke his heart. He had never felt so alone in the world, nor known such anguish. Instead of falling to pieces, Richard struggled to put his mind to the task at hand. He had to put Kalin out of his mind if he was going to help her. He knew that was impossible, but he tried to keep his thoughts on Joseph Ander and what must be done. He needed to be able to heal her. He would do anything to remedy her suffering. Thankfully, she wasn't conscious. Richard thought he knew what Joseph Ander had done, but he didn't have the slightest idea of what he might do to counter it. He figured he had several days until he got there to think about it. Richard still had the subtractive side of his power. He had used that before and understood a little about it. Nathan, a prophet and Richard's ancestor, had once told him that his gift was different from that of other wizards because he was a war wizard. Richard's power worked through need, and it was invoked by anger. Richard had a powerful need. Now, he had enough anger for 10 wizards. The thought hit him. That was part of the way Joseph Ander described what he did. He created what he needed. Richard wished he knew how this insight might help him. Captain Myford clapped a hand to the leather over his heart as Richard leaped off his horse. "Captain, I need a fresh horse. In fact, I better have 3. I have to go." Richard pressed his fingers to his forehead, trying to think. "I want you to get these men packed up, and as soon as all the rest come in from watching the boat, I want you out of here." "Where are we going, Lord Rawl, if I might ask?" "You and your men are going back to General Rybish. I won't be going with you." The captain followed Richard as he went to gather up his and Kalin's things. As Captain Myford followed, he issued orders to several of his men, calling for fresh horses for Lord Rawl, along with supplies. Richard told one of the soldiers he wanted their best mounts for a long, hard ride. The man ran off to see to the task. The captain waited outside as Richard went into the tent to pack. He began gathering their things. When he picked up Kalin's white Mother Confessor dress, his hands began trembling and he fell to his knees, overcome with grief. Alone in the tent, he prayed, begging the good spirits as never before to help him. He promised them anything they wanted in return. Recalling that the only thing he knew he could do was to banish the chimes so he might heal Kalin, he set about finishing as quickly as he could. Outside, the horses were waiting. It was just getting light. "Captain, I want you and your men to get back to General Rybish as soon as you can. And the Dominie Dirch, with the reports of the Special Ender Guard units, I think we may have trouble. Will we be safe going past the Dominie Dirch?" "No. From the reports, I would suspect the guard troops to be Imperial Order men. I would also expect them to take the Dominie Dirch in order to keep Rybish at bay. From this moment on, you are to consider yourself in enemy territory. Your orders are to escape. If anyone tries to stop you, kill them and keep going. If the order, as I suspect, takes the Dominie Dirch, we can use the one weakness they will have. They will be spread too thin to resist you in force. Assume Imperial Order troops will be manning the Dominie Dirch. Concentrate your force into a cavalry charge and punch through their line. Because they have control of the Dominie Dirch, they probably won't offer much resistance, thinking they can kill you once you go past." The man was looking worried. "Then you think you will have the stone weapons down by then, Lord Rawl? You will counter their magic?" "I hope to. But I may not. Just in case, I want you and all your men to plug your ears, and your horses' ears, with wax and cotton or cloth. Plug them tight, so you can't hear until you're over the horizon."
"You mean that will protect us?"
"Yes." Richard thought he understood the way the Dominie Dirch worked. Du Shailu had told them that when she drowned, she heard the chimes of death. Joseph Ander would have needed a way to control and focus the killing power of the chimes. He gave them the answer in what he had created. The Dominie Dirch are bells. They would be bells for a reason, to be heard. If you can't hear them, then you won't be harmed. The captain cleared his throat.
"Lord Rawl, I don't mean to question your knowledge of things of magic, but can a weapon of that much destructive power be defeated so easily?"
"It was done before, I believe. I think the Haken people who once invaded must have figured it out too, and in so doing were able to get past."
"But, Lord Rawl..."
"Captain, I'm the magic against magic. Trust me, it will work. I trust you to be the steel, trust me with the magic."
"Yes, Lord Rawl."
"Once past, head for General Rybish. This is important. Tell him I want him to pull back."
"What? Now that you have the way past the Dominie Dirch, you don't want him to use it?"
"The Dominie Dirch are going to be destroyed. I can't leave them for Jigang to hide behind. But I don't want our forces to come down here. Jigang is also coming here for food for his army. I hope to spoil some of that food. Tell the general my orders are for him to protect the routes up into the Midlands. Out here on the plains, he doesn't stand a chance against the order's numbers. He will have a better chance of keeping Jigang from advancing into the rest of the Midlands if our forces fight our way, not Jigang's."
"Yes, sir. Wise advice."
"It should be. It's General Rybish's advice. I hope, too, to reduce the order's numbers. Tell him to use his discretion."
"What about you, Lord Rawl? Where is he to find you?" You tell him to worry about his men, not me. I'm not sure where I'll be. Ribish knows what to do. That's why they made him a general. He would know better than I what to do about soldiering. Yes, sir. The general is a good man. Richard held up a finger for emphasis. This is important. I want you to follow this order, and I want Ribish to follow it. The people of Andreth have made their choice. I don't want a single one of our men lifting a weapon to help them. I don't want any of our men to have to shed blood for these people. Understand? Not one. The color went out of the captain's face. He backed away a half step. Not one drop of our blood, Richard said. Yes, sir. I will tell the general your exact words. My orders. Richard climbed up into the saddle. And I mean that. You're all good men, Captain Myford. Someday I want you going home to your families, not dying for nothing. The captain saluted with a fist to his heart. Our sincere hope too, Lord Rall. Richard returned the salute, and then trotted his horse out of camp for the last time, on his way to perform his final duty. Chapter 68. Darling, I'm home, Dalton called toward the bedroom. He had sent up a bottle of wine, along with a plate of Teresa's favorite dish, suckling rabbits roasted in a red wine sauce. Mr. Drummond was most pleased to be able to keep his job by complying with the unusual request. Perfumed candles were lit around the rooms, the drapes were drawn, and the servants all sent away. The master and the mistress wanted to be alone. Teresa met him at the bedroom door with a glass of wine and a smile.
Oh, sweetheart, I'm so glad you were able to come in early tonight. I've so looked forward to it all day.
As have I, he said with his best smile. She gave him a mischievous look.
I'm so looking forward to proving to you how much I love you, and to thank you for being so understanding about my duty to the sovereign.
Dalton slipped the silk robe from her shoulders, kissing her bare flesh. She giggled as he worked his kisses up her neck. She made a feeble effort to slow his advances. She hunched her head against his face.
Dalton, don't you want some wine?
I want you, he said in an intimate growl. It's been too long.
Oh, Dalton, I know. I've ached for you.
Then prove it, he teased. She giggled again against his continued kisses.
My, but what's gotten into you, Dalton? She moaned. Whatever it is, I like it.
Tess, I've taken the day off tomorrow, too. I want to make love to you tonight and all day tomorrow. She responded to his intimacies as he guided her toward their big bed with the hammered iron posts that looked like the columns outside the Office of Cultural Amity, the bed that belonged to the Minister of Culture, along with everything else in the magnificent apartments. Once all of this splendor would have brought him great pleasure, pleasure in what he had accomplished, in what he had attained, and how far he had come.
Dalton, please don't be disappointed, but Bertrand is expecting me tomorrow afternoon.
Dalton shrugged as he gently placed her on the bed.
Well, we have tonight and in the morning again, right?
She beamed.
Of course, sweetheart. Tonight and for the morning. Oh, Dalton, I'm so happy you understand about the sovereign needing me.
But I do, darling. You may think this sounds strange, but in a way I find it exciting.
You do, she grinned her wicked grin. I like the idea of that. You being excited, I mean.
She watched as he opened her robe and kissed her breasts. He came up for breath. To know the sovereign himself chooses my wife, my beautiful Tess, and by the direct word of the Creator at that, is the best compliment a loyal Ander man could ever have.
Dalton, she said, breathless from his kisses and caresses. I have never seen you like this.
She drew him closer.
I like it. I like it a lot. Come here. Let me show you how much.
Before she began, she pulled back.
Dalton, Bertrand was pleased, too. He said he liked your attitude. He said he found it exciting, too.
We all need our sovereign to guide us into the future and bring us the Creator's words. I'm so glad you can help relieve the sovereign's stress in this life. She was panting now.
Yes, Dalton, I do. I really do. It's so, I don't know, so wonderful to have such a high calling.
Why don't you tell me all about it, darling, as we make love? I'd like to hear it all.
Oh, Dalton, I'm so glad.
Dalton allowed himself a couple of days to recover after being with Tess. It had been an experience he once would have found the height of his existence. It once would have been a source of joy. After the experience, though, he needed to deprive himself of Tess for several days in order to be in a state of heightened need for a task such as he must now perform. The hallway was deserted outside her quarters and offices. Bertrand was in the opposite wing with Teresa, having the stresses of his high office relieved. Dalton had made sure it was a time when Teresa was with Bertrand. The thought of it would help him focus on the work at hand. Bertrand and his wife made sure they rarely encountered one another. Having their quarters in opposite wings helped.